Accession number 9202, rule number 7.
Mr. Ray, reel 7. You were telling me about contrasting Gallipoli fighting
There wasn't any. You couldn't compare with France, having the knowledge of what things were like in France afterwards, you see. There's no comparison between France and the Dardanelles.
Can you remember anything about the daily routine in the front line? What sort of things you'd do to pass the time during the day?
Well, I think you'd just sit around. If you had anything to read or write, it was fine. But there was always little bits of repair jobs to do, and things like that, in the front line. It used to be... Well, you could have in the sun. Naturally, the sun seemed to always. It was very warm through the day. That you didn't want to do very much really work. The main thing was to keep out of the way. You know, keep out of the way of any shelling, anything like that. And so you sort of laid low. At night time, of course. You prepared for the work, or did some of the work which you ought to have done, or you could have done, through the day.
What sort of work was that?
Well, that was tidying up things in your own place, you see, where you were. Or if you wanted to, you couldn't write letters, anything like that. You could write them through the day, which no one ever bothered very much about writing letters. We used to get those field postcards. They were all ready. I am well. Have not had... I am well printed on them. The questions and answers were written on the cards.
Did you used to send them back?
And you used to... All you had to do was tick that this is right. You know, I have had... No letter from you since so-and-so. Hope you are well. That kind of thing, you know.
Did you used to write proper letters home
yourself? Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Did you get letters back?
And parcels as well.
What would be in the parcels?
funny thing. I recall it was a standing joke. We used to get lots and lots of bully beef in our rations, and the walls of the bivouacs that we built up, you know, we kept the sides up with the tins of bully beef and that kind of thing, you see. And sometimes, well, it had been known, I know it was a fact in France, that someone got a parcel with a tin of bully beef from home. It was a standing joke. That was the kind of thing. But we used to get parcels of cakes and the like. Yeah.
Did you get them often?
No, not often enough, no.
Would you share them with your particular friends, or did everybody just keep their own?
Well, no, you share them sometimes. Yes, occasionally you'd share them, because there'd be one or two, you know, there'd be some who wouldn't get any mention at all, unfortunately. And you might give something that you've got, you know, part of what you got.
What about sentry duties? Did you have to do them?
two up and two down.
Could you explain
two up,
that?
Two up on the fence, up and two, and four down, that kind of thing. I didn't do very much. You seem to be too much alive at night time. You know, there's too much. There actually wasn't a. For me, I never had that experience where there was a lot going on at night time. Everything was very as quiet as possibly could be.
Would you, when you were a sentry, would you use a periscope or did you just look over the top carefully?
Well, no. I never had any periscope at all before going later on to France.
I'd like to look at some of the things affecting health. You mentioned earlier that you had some problem with dysentery. Well, did you find the flies a pest at Gallipoli? In the front line? Or anywhere else?
Yes, I didn't find them.
Were there a lot of them?
I couldn't find them. I couldn't say that I was very... greatly troubled. Mosquitoes, yes.
There were mosquitoes, were
there? Well, oh yes, yeah. They were so. They used to trouble you. Of course, if you were anywhere near water, any other impediment, you know. There used to be quite a lot of mosquitoes.
Did anybody get malaria in your unit?
No, not to my knowledge. I never knew. There was a thing that you knew that was there, the malaria, but I never knew what malaria was until the months. Years afterwards, you see, I think that malaria was a thing that used to strike people, but before ever it was became settled in that system, it was it didn't seem to knock them over straight away. I was with an officer later on. I don't know whether I told you about him. He had ague, and I think ague of that. That's a sort of malaria, ague, but he wasn't. Actually, he was the battalion. He was in charge of us as battalion signalers, but he never went into the. He was never in the front line. He wasn't with the unit. He was with the. At the base depot all the time.
What about lice? Were they a problem to the troops or you?
Yes, right.
How was that? What was the problem with them? Could you explain just?
You mean they used to get into the seams of the tunics, you know, the seam in your trousers and shirts and whatever. You know the army shirt, the army type of army shirt they used to dish out, and of course, because you couldn't get, you never had the opportunity for the baths and such like. See. And
did you try and get rid of them, or is there any method of getting rid of them you found?
Not until things were really organised. I don't know that they ever were, because I wasn't long enough on the peninsula. You see, I left it on June the 4th. And what they had after that, I don't know. But. I don't know that, generally speaking, in France, say, we used to have what they called places where you could go and have fumigation, you see.
Were there many dead bodies in the area around where you were trapped in no man's land or built into the parapets?
No. No, there wasn't a lot of not while we were going round in the normal everyday course of life. There weren't so many casualties, actually. It was more sickness there.
So you didn't suffer a lot of casualties while during this period in May before June the 4th?
We didn't. We suffered some, but not a great lot, no.
And there were no dead bodies, sort of Turkish dead bodies or anything in no man's land causing offence or smell or anything?
Well, I suppose there would be. But then that would be up to the Turks, because...
No, I just meant, were they a nuisance with smell or anything like that?
I don't know, but you see... Well, it's right that you should ask me that, because the Turks wouldn't come out to do anything for fear that we shot them, would they? And vice versa. You know, we would have to, any of our people that were around about, they would have to, well, they'd have to leave them, wouldn't they? You couldn't do anything about it. That side of the hostilities never seemed to trouble me very much, you know.
What about the latrines in the front line? Were they also the pole, Treslin pole affair, or how? What did you use for the toilets in the front line?
Well, there was nothing, really.
There were no formal arrangements? People just went...
No. Yeah. Of course, I can't say I recall. Remember anything outstanding about that
what,
kind of thing?
What was morale like amongst the troops? Before the June the 4th, during May, while they're in the front line and around that, what was the morale like?
It was all right. It was fairly good.
Were you still getting on well with the officers and NCOs at the time?
Yes.
What about military discipline in the front line? Was there any problem with people... shooting themselves or to get out of it or anything like that, or suicides or problems with sentries falling asleep, any military discipline?
I think that at that time things were too new in men's minds. They hadn't become acclimatized to the everyday type of rough and tumble.
When you were in the front line, how long would you be there before you went back to your bivouac trenches in the reserve?
To me, it was infinitesimal, because I wasn't there very long to start with. You see, there was no set pattern developed in the meantime.
So you went into the line for a while and came back for a while.
Well, that's all. You see, actually. I was only in till June.
What did you do while you were in the rest areas, when you in your bivouac slit trenches? What were your duties?
No, nothing.
Did you get the chance to go and bathe in the sea?
No.
So you had? Did you have any recreations at all while you were in rest?
No.
Did boredom creep in?
No. Boredom. I didn't know anything about it. I say I wasn't all that long there, you see. May, June the 4th. What experience I had in Dardanelles was packed into a very short space of time. And then after being wounded, and I went to Malta,
You didn't go back. What did you have any signalers duties at all? You mentioned it. You didn't have any at all.
No, finished after that. Finished.
So you just ordinary run.
Well, there wasn't the scope for it. There wasn't the need for it. You see, they were living in the. They were operating in the days of the South African War. If you've read anything about the South African War, all the tracts of land that they covered, travelling day after day, well, they had to have something in the form of signalling outfits and signallers to perform the work. But they didn't need that. But they thought that's the type of thing that they would be doing on the peninsula.
So you were just acting as an ordinary infantry?
Oh, yes, just an ordinary infantry. Yeah.
Were there any attacks that your unit was involved in before June the 4th?
Spasmodic attacks, yes. One or two spasmodic attacks, but...
Did you actually attack yourself, your unit?
Not until June the 4th.
Not until June the 4th?
Well, no, I was... more or less, there was one or two attacks by the Turks,
What do you remember about those?
Nothing very much, no. The first and foremost was when we first really got into the line, we were in the line, 29th Division, and our division, stretch across the line, and the Royal Scots came into it somehow. They were the only territorial battalion in the 29th Division, and they were linked up. They linked up with the what they call those troops in. Oh, Senegalese. They're Africans, you know. And the Turks broke the line there between the Royal Scots and the Senegalese. And I always thought, Thomas came home to me, that was the difference between a disciplined crowd and an undisciplined crowd, because you could say what you like. You couldn't get a greater disciplined crowd than the men in the British Army, the regular army. But when it came to you couldn't compare them with the territorial army couldn't compare with the regular army for discipline, you see.
Was there actually an attack on your own front while you were there?
Well, there was a whole general attack. General attack.
How did you repel it, your unit?
Well, what it was just that. it just petered out. They just petered out. It wasn't an attack that lasted for days. It was just an attack one night, that's all.
They were repelled by small arms fire and such. What did you know of the planning for the attack on June the 4th? What were you told was going to happen?
We just knew that it was going to start. We just knew that there was this stunt coming up on June the 4th. This is advance, they called it, you see. We hadn't been given any prior information about it. And looking back, you come to the conclusion that all that was really a pity. If we'd been told beforehand what to expect or what sort of thing, Well, we might have acted accordingly because it broke down, it fell through. In other words, the attack was a failure.
What were you told your unit and you yourself were supposed to do? Were you given orders that made it clear what you were meant to do?
No. 2 days before, on the 2nd of June, we were doing something that you asked me before. We were detailed off to make a communication trench. And this is in the evening. It's daylight, though. So we were digging this trench, and the Turks, when they spotted a body of men, they used to fire shrapnel. Because when the fire shrapnel and it spread round, it would catch more men than just an ordinary, perhaps one shell or two shells, you see. So anyway, I was chatting up with two more men, and we all three came from Durham, County Durham. And I said to this is interesting to you, I asked them where they came from. Oh, one said one. They came from Windy Nook. Well, that was the name of the place in Durham County, you see. So, I said, you will remember then that Windy Nook, the colliery blacksmith that committed murder. Well, we've been talking along those lines about this man, this bastard, who murdered a co-op official at the local co-op, you see. Is it interesting? And as he was going to work this blacksmith, you see, he worked on the colliery, about 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, and he had to pass this place where he committed the murder that night before, about midnight. And he saw a policeman on duty, and he said, why are you so roundabout? You're early round this morning, so and so, to the policeman. I said, it's a pretty bad deal, the policeman said. Oh, he said, well, what is it? Well, he said the policeman, he said, that so-and-so's been murdered. Oh. Why, who could have done that? Yeah, that's what we're here to find out. So he went on to his work, the blacksmith. He says, well, he said, I hope you catch him. That was the Friday morning. And of course this, a big powerful man. He went off to work. And the following Friday, police sergeant went on his own to the where this man was working, the blacksmith. Oh, Noble his name was. Noble, aye. Oh, he said, Bill, I know, he said, I wonder if you wouldn't mind coming along to this station. We think you might be able to give us a help, give us some information. Oh, he said, any time. He said, any time will do so. Right. So off he went to the police station. He never got out. And that's what we were talking about. And while we were talking about that, the Germans fired his shrapnel. And there was a piece in his nose of the shrapnel. Caught me on my left shoulder blade, you see. And hit me. And knocked me over into the trench. And it didn't break the skin, just black and blue. And not as much, not sufficient to warrant me going to see the sick bay, you see. So I just carried on. And the next day but one, you see, 2 days after, we had this advance, so to speak, you see. And there was no, we were just told that they were making this advance.
When were you told that?
Well, it wasn't, in a sense, an actual, I can't recall it being an actual order, but we just had to be prepared, you see, get on and we were going to do this in the morning, on that particular morning when it happened. And when it started, there was just a little bit of the artillery fire. And then when we got the order, we had to get out the trench and run forward, you know, with the bayonets fixed. And then we ran so far forward, then dropped. And then ran so far forward again and dropped. And lo and behold,
were you under heavy fire?
No. We were under fire, but not all that heavy. Anyway, I looked to my side, the right hand side, and the man that dropped beside me, he was in one of the other battalions. He wasn't in our battalion. And strangely enough, he worked next to me down the pit. This was, you know, it's such a surprise, like that. And I'm trying to think, he was one. And there were two battalions, and there was one battalion that day that was wiped out, you know.
Collingwood.
Was it? What was the other?
Howe, Hood.
No. There was, no. Benbow. Huh? It was either the Benbow or the Collingwood. I think it was the Benbow. And he said he'd left them because he joined up with us because he thought we had more experience, this chap. So that was that. Anyway, I was wounded in his foot, left foot. And
how did that happen? I mean, what were you...
Well, I was running, you know, I was going forward, and all of a sudden I felt this sting right in the bottom of my foot. And, I couldn't put the foot to the ground. Stopped. And the two men bandaged my foot. Took my field dressing out of my tunic. And they were both killed with snipers, by a sniper. After they'd fixed me up. So that was pretty... I didn't go. I couldn't do anything more after that. And naturally, I had to get back into the trenches.
Had you come far from them?
Well, as far as from here to the end of our street here,
about 100 yards.